Let's go ahead and open to 2 Kings chapter number 2, verse 6 is where we're going to begin today. We were in the middle of the story of Elijah preparing to leave his ministry in this time period and in this place. He's been functioning as kind of the lead prophet in the northern kingdom of Israel for quite some time now. But now God has a different plan in mind for him. And I shared with you last time, and I'm going to repeat it again today, my own conviction, my own opinion, that Elijah will be transported by God straight into the future from where he's at here in this story to take part in the story yet future to us in the book of Revelation. I really do believe he's one of the two witnesses in Revelation chapter number 11. And I don't think for him it's going to be a very long gap in between. I think he goes straight from one to the other. And it'll be an interesting little time warp situation for him. But having said all that, let's look at his departure from this time period for sure, as it's recorded in the text. Now, it all started up in the interior of northern Israel, up at Gilgal, which is close to the city of Bethel. He had told Elisha, "You stay here in Gilgal, I'm going to Bethel." But Elisha insists on traveling with him. So they go. When they arrive at Bethel, the prophets there take Elisha aside and say, "You know that the Lord's going to take him away soon, right?" And he says, "Yes, I know. Don't talk about it." So then Elijah says, "I'm going down to Jericho. You stay here at Bethel." But Elisha has nothing with that. He wants to go with him because he knows something's up. And they go to Jericho. At Jericho, same thing happens again. The prophets there have been clued in by God. Elijah is getting ready to leave their presence, their time period. And Elijah tells Elisha, "You just stay here." Even though Elisha is like, "No, I don't want to talk about this with the prophets. I want to stay with Elijah." So he continues with him. So that's where the story takes up today. Verse number 6. Then Elijah said to him, "Please stay here, for he who is has sent me to the Jordan," that is to the river, to the crossing point. "But he said, as he who is lives, and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. So they're walking together. However, verse 7 tells us that 50 men of the sons of the prophets also went, and they stood at some distance from them as they both were standing by the Jordan. So this tells you that these groups of prophets at Jericho, at Bethel, at Gilgal, perhaps other key cities, are pretty good-sized groups of leading priests or priestly-like men. They are keeping the Word of God active and alive in the northern kingdom. And so 50 of these guys are going to the river, which is about 6 miles east of Jericho, to be a witness to whatever happens next. And so while the two men, Elijah and Elisha, are standing next to the Jordan River, which it was much bigger back in the time period of Elijah. Today, a lot of the water gets siphoned off upstream because there's just so many more people living in that part of the world than were in the past. And so the River Jordan here would have been fairly decent-sized, wide. This is probably one of the crossing points, one of the fords of the Jordan. What happens is reminiscent of what happened when Joshua first entered the Promised Land 550 years earlier. Verse 8, Elijah took his cloak, his special clothing on the outside of his body, and rolled it up and struck the water. and the water was parted to one side and to the other till the two of them could go over on dry ground. So just like Israel had entered the promised land 550 years earlier on dry ground at this exact site, Elijah and Elisha leave the promised land proper and go across into the annexed area of eastern Israel. Verse number 9. When they had crossed, and remember their crossing had been watched by those 50 guys, and then the water comes back into place as soon as they finished crossing. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for you before I'm taken from you." So he says, "All right, you're here with me. You know what's about to happen. I'm going to be taken away. What's your request? What is it that you'd like to have?" Elisha said, "Please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me." Now, this is misunderstood by English readers. He is not asking for two times the miracle power of Elisha. What he's asking for is to be Elisha's heir, to be like his firstborn son. Now, he's not related to him, but he has been brought along as a protege, as one of the many prophets that have been learning from Elijah. But he says, "I want to be the heir of your ministry." That's what he's saying. And the double portion idea comes from this. When a father had like three sons, and he was getting ready to divide up his property in his will, his property would be divided into four equal portions, and a double portion was given to the eldest one, or to the heir. And so that's the whole idea of the double portion thing. So Elisha says, "Please let there be a double portion of your spirit on me." And he said, "You've asked a hard thing." So you've asked for something that's a very big deal. I mean, you think about the ministry of Elijah the prophet, all the things that he's done. The really big thing that we remember is when he had the contest against the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah up on Mount Carmel. And at that time, he was like feeling really depressed after that victory because he felt like he was the only one left still trying to promote the true worship of the true God. So it's a heavy-duty job that Elisha is asking to take on, to be the leader of all of the prophets in northern Israel. But Elijah goes on to say, "Yet, if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you don't see me, it shall not be so." So it's going to be up to God. If he lets you see me as I'm being taken away, because apparently he knew something different was going to happen. He's not going over here to die like Moses did, because we're in the general vicinity on the eastern side of the Jordan River. It's in that general vicinity where Moses left the camp of Israel and went up onto Mount Nebo and died and was buried by God or by God's angels in a secret place. So nobody knew ultimately where Moses went away to, because that was a private thing. So something similar is now happening with Elijah. He knows that God's got something yet planned for him, but he doesn't know what it is. But he doesn't even know whether or not Elisha is going to see him at the very last moment of his departure. So he does know this. If you see it happen, that means God approves of your request. Apparently, they keep on walking. Verse 11, as they still went on and talked, and we're not privy to what they talked about. We're not even privy to what where they walked to and how far they got. As I was just suggesting, I think they may have been paralleling the walk of Moses on that day of his departure when he died, that they might have been heading over toward Mount Nebo. But as they still went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. Now, these chariots of fire, these horses of fire, this is some sort of angelic appearance. And they're not what takes Elijah away. They're actually what separates the two men from one another. And then Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And whirlwind is the way that the holy presence of God, the tower of cloud by day and the tower of fire by night, is described in other places, that it looks like a little tornado, if you will, just coming up from the earth marking God's presence. So that's what Elijah is caught up into, and he disappears up into the sky, up into the top of that tower. And we typically talk about Elijah being caught up to God in heaven, but I think it would be more accurate that he is simply caught up by God from the earth. And in my opinion, he is immediately transported right back down to planet Earth many, many, many centuries into the future, yet beyond where we're at right now in our own history. So this is all taking place in about 862 BC. And so here we are in 2021. So we're talking about a long time ago, 2,800 some years ago that this happened. And I think he was pushed forward in time beyond where we're at. But Elisha got to see it. And that means that his request is being answered. But first, his heart is kind of broken. Elisha saw it and he cried out, "My father, my father!" And that's his special pet name for Elijah. He's like a dad to him. "The chariots of Israel and its horsemen!" And then he saw him no more. So he's excited about seeing something special, the supernatural presence of God's angelic army, but he's not happy about the fact that Elijah is now gone out of his life. He's not going to see him anymore. And so he took hold of his own clothes and he tore them in two pieces. So he grabs a hold of his own clothing and he just rips it so hard that it rips into two. And then he took up the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Now, I don't know how you want to picture this. Did this outer robe of Elijah just simply fall down on the ground as Elijah is snatched up in the whirlwind? Or, as I've seen it dramatically presented, as Elijah is farther up into the sky, it kind of flies off of him and flutters down and lands at Elisha's feet as a dramatic representation that his request has been granted. Because remember, the way that Elisha's association with Elijah started is Elijah came up and just threw this cloak around his shoulders, basically saying, "Hey, come with me, you're going to be my protege." Well, this cloak of authority, this mantle of authority, and that's where we get the modern day saying about a mantle of authority, this mantle of authority is now in Elisha's hands. And I warned you already once, I'm going to do that a lot. I'm almost guaranteeing you. I don't know why, but these two guys' names are the worst for me. And I try to catch myself before it happens, but don't always succeed. So if you hear me swap their names around, just adjust it in your head, okay? So he, meaning Elisha, took the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him, and he struck the water. So now he's walked all the way back to the Jordan. And he takes that special piece of clothing, marking the authority of Elijah, and apparently rolls it up just like he saw his master do. And he says out loud, "Where is he who is the God of Elijah?" Now, keep in mind, over on the other shore, we've got those 50 guys that have been camping out, kind of waiting to see what would happen next. And so they're watching this happen. And so he strikes the water, and when he'd struck it, the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha went over. So this is the third time now that this site of the River Jordan has been split open so that people could walk over on dry ground. First time happened 550 years earlier for the entire nation of Israel to cross into the Promised Land. The next time happened just minutes, maybe an hour or so earlier from this one, when Elijah is the one that opened it up. And now Elisha is doing it, and witnesses have seen it happen, so they know. It says, verse 15, when the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho saw him opposite him, they said, "The spirit of Elijah rests on Elisha." And they came to meet him and bowed to the ground before him. So this has all been clear evidence to them. This is the new leader of the prophets of northern Israel. And so they come and show him proper honor and respect. Verse 16. They said to him, "Behold now, there are with your servants 50 strong men. Please let them go and seek your master. It may be that the spirit of he who is has caught him up and cast him upon some mountain or into some valley." So these guys are like, hey, there's 50 people here that could spread out all over the place and look for him. He was caught up into that whirlwind. Maybe God just took him someplace and dropped him down some other spot. Let us go and look for him. He said, "You shall not send. That won't be necessary." But when they urged him till he was ashamed, so they just kept pestering him, kept saying, "But what if? Maybe he really isn't all the way gone yet." So their hopes are still there that the prophet leader of the prophets is still around. And so they pester him so much that he finally gives in because he's like, "Well, what if? What if maybe they're right? And I don't send, and I could have found him and got him back sooner." He finally gives in and says, "Okay, send." Excuse me. They sent, therefore, 50 men, and for 3 days they sought him, but did not find him. 3 days looked for him, never found him, because he's no more here. He's been caught away. He is the second of two men that God pulled out of their time period, out of their region, without them dying. And those two men are Enoch from before the flood and Elijah from after the flood. And that is why I believe those two men are the two witnesses who were taken ahead of their own times to die after serving God for 3.5 more years, being the two witnesses of the book of Revelation chapter 11. Just my opinion. That's all it's worth, folks. Verse number 18. They came back to him while he was staying at Jericho, and he said to them, "Did I not say to you, do not go?" So basically, he says, I told you so. It's kind of a little bit humorous to me that we've got a prophet of God like Elisha saying, I told you so. Now, the men of the city said to Elisha, behold, the situation of this city is pleasant, as my Lord sees, but the water's bad, and the land is unfruitful. Now, Jericho had been in ruins for many centuries until the northern kingdom of Israel got established, and then it was rebuilt. And the penalty phases for rebuilding it were carried out against the guy that did it. But once it was rebuilt, apparently under the leadership of Elijah, a school of prophets or a community of prophets was established there. And these guys are saying, look, this is a good site. There is water that's flowing through here, and you can still see this. In the region around Jericho, there are some springs that provide water to this region, and there's enough of a volume of water, it flows down into the Jordan Valley, or into the Jordan River. But at this time, the prophets at Jericho say, but the water's bad. It's not productive, this water that's here right now, because for whatever reason, things are not wanting to grow. So it's not a really good place to have a community. So he's effectively asking Elisha for advice. What are we supposed to do about it? And so this is what God tells Elisha to do. He said, bring me a new bowl and put salt in it. So they brought it to him. And then he went to the spring of water. He threw the salt into it, out of that new bowl, and said, thus says he who is, I've healed this water. From now on, neither death nor miscarriage shall come from it. So the water's been healed to this day, according to the word that Elisha spoke. And there are tourist guides that will tell you that the spring they show you is that exact same spring, and that it provides some of the best water in the world. And so we know that whatever was bad water here at this time became good water because of the ministry of Elisha. But its big thing is that it allowed the community of prophets at Jericho to keep their work up. He went up from there to Bethel. So he's retracing his steps from whenever Elijah was getting ready to depart. And while he was going up on the way, so he's on the road from Jericho back up the hill to Bethel, which is going to be about a day's journey since you're going uphill quite a ways. And somewhere along the way, maybe not very far from Michmash, maybe close to AI, some small boys, and I don't think you should think of little bitty kids. I think you should think of teenagers, maybe even middle teens. Some of these boys came out of the city and they jeered at him saying, go up, bald head, go up, bald head. Now, ever since I was a kid, I've heard this preached as what happens next was punishment for making fun of Elisha's bald head. But as I've studied it as a student of Scripture, as an adult, I've come to a completely different conclusion. The wording here is parallel to the wording of what happened to Elijah. He went up in the whirlwind. And so what's being mocked here, more importantly than the bald head comment, is the message, the report that Elisha brought back about what happened to Elijah, that he went up in a whirlwind and disappeared. And so they are mocking him by saying, why don't you go up in a whirlwind, Baldy? Go up, Baldy! And so they are making fun of his ministry as the prophet of God, not his bald head. So he turned around, and by the power of God, the direction of God, when he saw them, he cursed them in the name of He who is. And two she-bears came out of the woods and tore 42 of the boys. Now, don't make the assumption, which I don't think is warranted, that these 42 teenage boys were killed. There is nothing about death in the passage explicitly. It's just that they were torn. They were mauled. And so they may have spent the rest of their lives marked by the scars of their rude mockery of the newly minted leader of the prophets of He Who Is. And then from there, he went up to Mount Carmel, which is apparently another site of a community. And from there, he returned to Samaria, which is the capital city of northern Israel. And so from here on out, we will be following the ministry of Elisha the prophet very closely.